Hello and welcome to Conversations in Cleantech, the podcast that celebrates the cleantech industry and the people that power it, brought to you by Brightsmith. For our seventh season, we're speaking to cleantech leaders about the process of investing in a cleaner planet, from inspiring stories and words of wisdom to financial forecast and investment insights. You can learn all about the people and companies who are driving these investments and propelling us towards a cleaner, greener tomorrow. I'm your regular host, Jenny Gladman, but this season there's a twist. I'll be taking a few months off to have my second baby. So I'm handing the reins of our podcast over to a series of fellow Brightsmithers who will be season 7's super co-hosts. So without further hesitation,
hi, this is Carmen Davis, and I'm one of the co-hosts of Conversations in Cleantech and one of Brightsmith's ever-growing hydrogen team. So today we will be chatting with an incredible guest. I'm happy to welcome Jessica Elwell, Secretary, Board of Directors for the United States Hydrogen Alliance, Board of Governors for 47G, founding member of Women Who Succeed, and Chief Operating Officer of Oxion Energy to today's show. So Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carmen.
Of course. Please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, great. I mean, it was a pretty thorough intro. That's a lot of what's going on right now. We're located in North Salt Lake. Oxion Energy is a company that's focused on converting carbon dioxide and water into sustainable fuels. So we're looking at hydrogen, sustainable aviation fuels, sustainable diesel fuel, looking at how we make sustainable practices in manufacturing processes that traditionally consume a lot of these materials. As you mentioned, I'm the chief operating officer here. I've been working with the team for over 10 years at this time. I have a background in chemical engineering, though at this point in my career, I think I do a lot more on the business side than I ever get to do on the engineering side. But luckily for me, we have a wonderful team of engineers that are a lot better at that than I am. So it works pretty well for all of us. I'm more the translator at this point. It's pretty great. Really excited about the organizations you mentioned that I get to participate in, the United States Hydrogen Alliance. I know today we're going to talk a lot about what clean tech companies and these emerging markets look like, and some of these industry organizations are so critical for what we're doing in building this pathway, supporting companies like Oxion. I think that's a bit of an intro.
Well, thank you. Really appreciate you sharing all of that. So maybe we'll start with just a little bit about you. So can you share a little bit more about your background and what initially sparked your interest in science and technology, especially in the context of some of your work with NASA and the Department of Defense?
Yeah, I mean, pretty non-traditional pathway. I'm originally from Wisconsin, if you can't hear it in my accent. I haven't lived there for, I don't know, I left when I was like 18, but it just stays with you once you're from there. I'm from a pretty small town. I think there was like 8,000 people when I lived there, you know, pretty traditional small town Wisconsin. But I was really lucky to grow up in a family that didn't really believe in these gender roles. I was raised really equal to my brothers. So it was pretty much an expectation, right, that we were going to go to school, we were going to find a pathway. And originally, I really wanted to be a music teacher. I thought that was going to be everything for me. But I started getting further into it, and I realized there were a lot of people with a lot more talent than me. It is a talent-heavy industry. So I made a bit of a pivot and went into chemical engineering. Originally, I thought I'd work in manufacturing heavily. Took my first co-op doing that and kind of realized, okay, maybe more in research and development. So that started that pathway towards an R&D for manufacturing type career path. I've worked in consumer products, specialty chemicals, biofuels, and now I joined this team in about 2013 doing that work with NASA. So it was really on program management from a technical perspective, and that really sparked a love for aerospace and defense. From there, we started Oxion in about 2017. That wasn't really a good fit for me at the time to go to a small business. So I took a position as the engineering and compliance manager for a defense company doing weapons development and manufacturing. And then in 2021, I returned to Oxion here. You know, it's been a really a really fun pathway. I think if you look at my resume, now it kind of makes sense, like how it built up. But as I was doing it, I think it was a little ADHD, but that's kind of a strength at this point, I think.
No, that's really incredible. What do you think have been some of your defining moments or experiences in your journey that have shaped that career path and, you know, driven your passion around sustainability and innovation?
I think that there were a couple of pivot points in my career. I had a few early career situations where I didn't really have a team that believed in me that much. They weren't, they didn't really see this whole management leadership role for me. And that was, you know, it was a long time ago. I had very small children at the time. I have two kids. Now they're 12 and 14 and, you know, it's just a ton of fun. We have a great time together, but it was an interesting career path then. What really brought me back to Oxyon was this core mission of what we're doing, right? I feel connected to jobs that I think matter to society as a whole. And I feel connected to jobs where I think the workforce itself is connected to a mission. So you get this opportunity where, you know, you're going into an office, you are doing sometimes mundane tasks, right? Like I don't love budget updates, but turns out important, I'll do them. But I think when you come in and you get these problems presented to you, our customers have phenomenal problems, world problems, right? Climate change and how do you get fuels to places where fuels don't exist? Like, what do you do? And I get to work with this team and this network of companies and universities and we get to come together and really leverage each other's skills and pull together solutions that nobody's come up with before. And to me, like, I don't know what's more motivating than that, coming into work to be able to, one, my team's phenomenal. Like, it's just a great group of human beings, but we get to just solve problems that nobody else even gets to approach, which is so cool.
It's incredible. Absolutely. I even feel like that from this side at Brightsmith, you know, getting to have interactions and conversations like this around the ways that we are going to change the world and the ways that we use energy are just so motivating. And it really helps you kind of wake up in the mornings a little bit more than some other roles. So yeah,
that's great. Make Sunday so bad.
Exactly.
So much of that, like, how do we bring the community into it? How do we do workforce development? How do we recruit and train and retain? And like, I think the clean tech industry is such it's so different from other industries I've worked in where you were making a widget or you were solving like a common problem. This one is like, you're solving a huge problem and it takes so many pieces and people coming together. Right. And that to me, like the orchestration of that is just, it's energizing, right?
It really is. It totally is. That's so great to hear. And like you mentioned a little bit ago, you know, transitioning from R&D to entrepreneurship can be quite a leap. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, that decision and, you know, the challenges and rewards of being a leader in the sustainable energy sector?
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be a little crazy. You have a really, really high pain threshold. But I mean, I live in Utah. The entrepreneurial community in Utah is I think unmatched. I really think it's unmatched. Wow. We have, like, I have mentors in all different industries across manufacturing and you name it. And they, you know, we really come together and try to solve problems that are common to different companies. Right. I think, you know, our company used to be focused on research and development. Now we have this product set that we're really ready to go through scale up and manufacturing. So now we're focused on that manufacturing step of it. The entrepreneurial journey is really like no other. I think, you know, there's some sleepless nights, but you really have to have this like joint mission. And your team has to be focused on what the goals are. And I think you can't get that in a large established company, right? Like you can't get this, it's like camaraderie. There's so much problem solving happening that the team grows together really quickly.
That's amazing.
I love it. It's definitely for me, at least at this point in my life. Who knows? Who knows how long we can sustain it, but you know, hopefully we'll grow Oxyon into a big company and the word entrepreneurial drop off.
Exactly. I love that. Yeah, actually, speaking of mentors, how important have mentors been throughout your journey? And I know we mentioned you were a part of Women Who Succeed. Can you tell us a little bit about like mentorship throughout your career?
For sure. It has been critical. I have been, I mean, in the beginning, I didn't really know, right? Like when you're starting out, you don't understand the impact your network and other people's influence really has on your career, what doors can be opened, what sounding boards you can have. And, as I'm getting further in my career, it's just so important to embrace these people who have gone through it before. Even if it's different, there's still like this aspect to it where there's similar problems, similar struggles. So I'm blessed with the mentors that are in my life. They put up with a lot from me. And the Women Who Succeed program, it's just phenomenal. Utah has some really terrible statistics for women who start post high school education and don't finish. We're the worst in the union for it. And so
Wow.
we've come together and really looked at that problem. And a lot of it is representation. Like if you see people doing things and the people look like you or have a similar background to you,
Yes.
then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I could do that. And so it's
Exactly.
this outreach to young women in our state, from middle school all the way through graduate school, right? Looking at what challenges are they facing? How do we bolster them up? How do we give them the confidence that you can take on really hard things and you can accomplish them? And how do we, financially support them? It's a huge scholarship program.
Wow,
And
that's great.
it's wonderful outreach. I love it. But I'll tell you, the network I've built through that for myself, like sometimes I feel a little guilty that I'm getting more out of it than they are. And like, I'm like, okay, I got to give back even more because
I love it.
it's a really, I mean, I highly recommend to anybody listening to this, like you have something to give to the next generation coming up or even your peers. And you have to like it, be a little open about your struggles, be a little open about what that looks like and what was hard and what was easy and how you did it. But man, building that network is really, that's really how you do it, right?
Oh, it's vital. And I mean, especially from our side within recruitment, you can see how deeply connected this industry is and any kind of local industry. And so leveraging that and leveraging, the leaders in your community is such a huge part of career development and a really important piece. That's all really, really interesting and great to hear that y'all are doing that in Utah. I'm going to have to look and see if there's some programs like that in Texas to join. That sounds amazing.
It's amazing. This one is, it's like a homegrown one through organization here in Utah that's very well connected. And it's
Wow.
been, man, I mean, my daughter applied for it this year. She's going into
Oh,
8th grade and
great.
I took her to an event and she's like, why am I not doing this? And I was like,
You're like,
oh
you're right.
man, that's great. She's like,
Wow.
how old do I have to be? I'm like, 7th grade. She's like, I'm in 7th grade. Dang it.
Oh my goodness, I love it. Okay, great. Well, in terms of, being a leader in a more male-dominated field, how do you feel you've chased face some of those unique challenges or barriers along your journey, and what are some of the obstacles that you've navigated through?
I mean, I kind of alluded to this earlier. There was some early career indication, right, that maybe as a young mother I couldn't take on as much as counterparts could, which I always thought was really interesting because all my counterparts had children the same age as my children, and it was like, oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting comment to
Very.
make. It's been interesting. I've been in aerospace and defense for the last more than a decade now. That is definitely, I've been in rooms where it's 100 people and I'm the only female. I've had some interesting conversations along that line of like, do I really belong there? I got in those rooms what I consider pretty young in my like mid-30s, right? And so you're looking around and it's a lot of like middle-aged men and you're just like, okay, well,
Yes.
I didn't ever have the perception that I would have less capability than a male counterpart. Nobody ever put that message in my head. And so I was lucky to not have that barrier. And so I didn't understand if there was hesitation. It didn't even, I think sometimes I didn't even perceive it. I'm an engineer. Sometimes we're not. I was probably just
Just out
like,
of sight, out of mind.
it's just like, oh, okay.
Exactly.
That was a weird comment.
Right.
I've been, I've led fully male teams. I think it's just an approach of, I don't see a difference. I don't see a difference in work ethic or capability. I do understand my strengths and weaknesses very well. So I think it's really important to partner with people who complement my weaknesses.
Absolutely.
And that's been huge throughout. Like if I know I can't, I'm not going to be good at something. It's not a skill I have. It's not a skill I want to develop. Being able to be like, oh, you have a strength that I don't have and I want it on my team. Right.
Yeah.
I really think that's been the key approach, has been that collaboration. It has been showing like, I can offer this to the team. You bring this to the team. Let's do it.
Yeah.
And so it's been, I would say it's a lot easier now than it was even 10 years ago, even five years ago, maybe. I think it's funny because when I do podcasts like this or something, my kids will watch it. And my son is always like, I don't understand that question. And I was like, that's great.
Yes, exactly.
That's the goal.
Yes.
He's like, why do they keep talking about why, you know, you're a woman in that job? He's like, aren't you just a person in that job? I'm like,
yes, exactly. No, that's wonderful that he's also getting raised in that environment where he doesn't differentiate that as well. So good on you. What advice would you have for, you know, other women aspiring to break into these STEM fields?
I mean, I think it's just be ready for work. It's hard, right? Engineering is no joke. I have this conversation with my kids all the time when they tell me that their homework's taking too long. I'm like, oh, honey, you told me you wanted to be an engineer when you grew up. This is like, buckle up, baby. This is going to get interesting. It's heads down work. It's, you know, I don't think there is an easy pathway to the chair I'm sitting in. There were definitely 100-hour weeks in my, you know, in my past. I don't doubt that there's some in my future. I don't love them. I'm not saying like make that a priority, but there's a lot of work to grow through it, right? You have to do each stage of the career development. It is rare you get to jump. You have to take on the jobs that have the mundane tasks. You have to do like, right? Not everything's exciting. That's why you get paid. You really just have to like work through what it looks like. But I think like the career advice I give when I talk to students is to understand like where you think you're heading and look at those job descriptions and look at what the requirements are, education requirements, job duties, and start taking on positions that get you that experience. Because you don't just get to jump into that, right? You don't just get to be like, I'm going to be this thing now. It's really, I want to be this thing, but I have to take these 17 steps to get there. And you can build this resume and you can build your network like that. I wish I would have listened when people told me how important a network was when I was younger.
I know it.
I'm from a small town in Wisconsin. Like I knew everyone in town. How much more of a network could you get? Like, it's pretty.
That is so true. No, it's so factual in the sense that you have to have that further look out and say, hey, these are the ways that I need to develop myself, but also what are the things I can do now to really develop? And there's so many ways to do it. And like you said, it's not a straight path, you know, it's going to be a lot of different things that you might not understand immediately how it's additive to your career. But as long as you have that long-term goal in mind and you're striving for that, I think it's so important. So thank you for sharing that piece. Moving into a little bit more about Oxion Energy. So one of Oxion's claim to fame is involving, you know, Martian propellant production and breathable oxygen. So it's really fascinating that your team was the first ever to produce a useful commodity off the face of the earth. Tell us a little bit more about the challenges and triumphs involved in achieving that milestone.
I mean, we could go through the challenge list. We'd like a whole separate podcast on that.
Oh my.
Our team, if you're familiar with technology readiness levels, that's right, how you go from an idea to something that's like proven in space. There's nine levels. They usually, on average, like this is just ballparking, but they usually take about 18 months to 2 years to 5 years a piece. We went from TRL 3 to 6 in 18 months.
Insane.
Insane. With a team of about, I think in total at our company, we had 22 people. We had, right, a fantastic network. We worked with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. We worked with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory of NASA. We had phenomenal manufacturing partners in Austria, like, and university support. And it was a phenomenal team. But it was pretty intense. It was pretty intense. And when you're a research company and you're building flight hardware, the documentation side of it, I don't think anybody was prepared for in any way. And we went through failures. We went through, you know, you really start to embrace this failure path. You really start to embrace that until you've failed, you really don't know where the limits are. And until you push those limits, right, like you don't know how to structure what you're doing. And so we just really started getting good at being okay with the word failure, which is hard, right? Especially if you have like a team of high achieving engineers who probably have.
I can only imagine.
All of a sudden, like every other week is a failure investigation. And you're just like, this is fine. I'm having fun.
Oh my gosh.
It set the basis for who we are. We are a different organization than we were before that program. The influence we had from these amazing organizations that we got to work with was really put us on the map, right? It really made us understand the critical nature of what we were doing. We understood how hard it was. Like, no one else is doing this, right? But then it gave us this product development effort that set us ahead of what other people in this industry can do. And so that claim to fame of being, you know, the only one to have ever sent this type of system to Mars and then have it function exactly like you said it was going to for 2 years. Like, it's a phenomenal achievement that I think everyone on our team and everyone we've added to the team since, we do follow-on projects with NASA. We've scaled that system up. We've coupled it with reactors to do liquid propellant production. You know, it's just really, the growth path of Oxyon is in the commercial market, but these like special customer projects where we're really like solving the hard problem of how do you get fuel somewhere that fuel doesn't exist is like, it's incredible. It's why you come to work, right? It's
yes.
It's so fun.
That's amazing. Wow. I have so much to think about and say about that entire project, but it would take up the rest of our time. So,
we'll do a follow on just on Mars.
Exactly. Wow. So you mentioned, you know, you have been working on a project with the Navy regarding jet fuel production. Can you provide a little bit of insight into how your technologies currently address energy processes on Earth and, you know, those potential impacts on sustainable aviation?
Yeah, that's great. We have a technology suite, to get a little bit techie. We have a technology suite that goes through a hydrogen or a syngas pathway. So we have technologies that produce hydrogen or syngas. Syngas is carbon monoxide and hydrogen. That is a common precursor for synthetic fuels. So when you're looking at a non-fossil based fuel, something that we're pulling directly out of the earth, we can take carbon dioxide and water and convert that into these like pre-steps to aviation fuel, jet fuel, right? Diesel fuel. And then we can put them through reactors and convert them into what society is using today for transportation. This project with the Navy is really exciting. The Navy is pulling carbon dioxide out of the water. And then we are pushing that through our system so that we can produce sustainable aviation fuel with the goal of producing it on ship, right? There's a ton of implications there. One of the major ones is the logistics side of energy supply for defense is enormous. It's enormous cost.
Incredibly so.
It's enormous risk. There's lives involved, life loss involved in that energy transfer, right? And so that's a really exciting project. We're building a lab scale system right now to do some testing. We'll give that to the Navy Research Laboratory, and they'll do their testing on it, putting it together with their systems that they're developing. It's those types of point of use fuel production or fuel production where we're looking at, you know, how do you use what's on site to make fuels. We have another really exciting project that is actually in fabrication right now. It's supposed to commission this summer. And that one's looking at taking the waste gas from a waste food digester. So they're taking waste food, putting it through a biological process, and that is has a waste stream to it of carbon dioxide and methane. Well, we're feeding the methane and the carbon dioxide into our system and then converting that to sustainable aviation fuel. So Incredible. You come up with these options where you can either make it where you use it, or you can Yes. make it where you're generating waste. Right. You can couple it with renewable energy sources, and you're really looking at like, okay, like how do we get off of this fossil fuel supply? How do we support a hydrogen economy, and how do we really get into sustainable fuels?
Yes, exactly. And that's something that I'm so excited about within this industry, is just all the different ways that they can connect and how we can really create this circular piece of renewable, sustainable energy in so many different markets. It's really fascinating to see. As, you know, COO of a growing business, what are your main priorities in scaling up operations and navigating the intricacies of product development, compliance, and customer acquisition?
I mean, that's also an entire podcast.
I know it.
We'll boil it down to a 30-second response, but that's a question. You know, for us, it is so critical that multiple technologies in this space succeed. Like, we are probably the biggest like champions of our competitors that there are, because it's an emerging economy. It doesn't Absolutely. Exist. In some cases, there's no infrastructure established for it, right? And so you're building through regulation, through policy, through community development, through community education. And that on top of what you're doing as far as technology development and manufacturing scale up. And so it's been critical for us to be a part of that community, to be a part of, you know, what we're doing. Like I said, the United States Hydrogen Alliance, they're focused on policy work for a hydrogen economy. For us, it's critical to be involved in that because they give us a voice. Mm-hmm. As a small business, they're giving us a voice. We're allowed, we get into rooms we wouldn't have by ourselves. So that's a huge part. As we scale up our manufacturing facilities, there's a huge part that we are in talks with the government about, right? Like, how do we do this not only in a sustainable way, but in a responsible way? How do we put jobs where jobs are needed? How do we Yes. help develop and support communities that have been impacted by the coal and oil industry? How do we get into underrepresented communities? How do we do this in a way that really helps us bring up our own community and our own nation? And so there's a ton on the liaison side. There's a ton on understanding, you know, what the struggles are of our local communities. Yes. And then, of course, there's always the investment portion of it, right?
Oh, yes.
All of it's money. Everything, yep. everything I just said costs money.
Exactly. You know, that leads exactly into my next question, because I was actually about to ask you, you know, could you discuss the role of venture capital and strategic partnerships in advancing the shared vision, and especially considering regulatory challenges, delays, you know, all of the different pieces that you were just mentioning play a part in this puzzle?
Yeah, it's, you know, we have been completely bootstrapped for the existence of our team, actually, like, not just Oxyon since its formation in 2017, but the entire team's technology development era that was, you know, 20 some odd years before that. We've been very successful in raising money from government grants, Department of Defense, NASA, obviously, Department of Energy, commercial contracts from people who are doing like innovative development projects. Those have been huge in funding us to this point. Now, when you're looking at upscaled manufacturing, it's 100% investment round. We're in an investment round right now. It's our first one. So it's kind of an interesting, we're kind of a unique company that we've existed for so long, and we have this like very developed technology suite.
Right.
And we've never taken on an investor. So it's a unique challenge for us. We're learning, right? We're partnering along the way. We're bringing in people who know things we don't know. That's the best way to do business.
Always.
And it's going to be critical. And for us too, in that, it's critical that other people who are taking on investment in this area be successful, right? Yes. They help anybody who takes on investment in clean tech and is successful with it, de-risks that investment for the next company.
Absolutely.
And so it's so important for us that, you know, similar companies in clean tech are doing good things with investment money. It's been really important that there's education programs for startups so that we don't have people who are like taking on money and then losing it and yes. really making this look riskier than we think it is. It's a challenge. It's a different challenge than we face in the past. We've definitely overcome some really difficult things, but this is like, it's just a new world. The investment side is going to be critical. Strategic partners are really, especially as we go to full scale manufacturing, strategic partners are going to be the future of how this rolls out. And so it's probably right now, as of today, with the technology set where it is the number one most critical pathway we have.
Absolutely. And, you know, what would you say would be some of the larger trends you've seen across, you know, investment within the hydrogen and green gas sector, you know, over the past couple of years? And maybe what do you kind of see over 2024?
It's tricky right now, right? It's hard to say our technology. So we do solid oxide electrolysis in the hydrogen landscape. It's an emerging technology that currently has a high CapEx to it because manufacturing capacities are really low. We have a pathway that it's competitive. We've shown, right, the demonstration side is great, but there's resistance to it because a lot of people want something that is already known, is already understood in the market, that they've already seen, you know, demonstrated at a large scale. We're seeing a lot of investment in those types of like known technologies, and there's a lot in the biospace, which is fantastic to see. It really is. That's great.
It really is.
It's like there's a need for education on new technologies. I think the DOE is doing a good job of educating, right? I'm seeing a lot more at conferences on some of the emerging technology side as opposed to just the established state of the art. And so that's helping. But yeah, it's an election year, so everything's pretty interesting.
Yes.
It's interesting times.
It really is. We will definitely see how it pans out, but I do think there absolutely is a path forward. And what do you think we can do as a collective, you know, to keep the momentum for the sector and encourage funding and investment, both public and private?
I think it's education. I think, you know, when we're on calls with new investors, there's a huge education phase to what the technology suite we're talking about does and means. And I think a standardization of terms and understanding of, right, like what these fuels can do, what these technologies offer, I think as they become more commonplace and investment firms start to talk to more and more companies and they start hearing more, I think it's really just getting the message out of what can be done, what has been done, right? Like, We were kind of surprised after we made oxygen on Mars and people still had no clue who we were. And I was like, well, that felt like a pretty big deal.
Right. So, where were you?
And like, even like, I'll even in our own state, like,
right.
No one, they did a huge news piece on it on the news and they never mentioned that it was made here. And I called them. I'm like, did you know that we made that in the town that you're presenting from? Like,
insane.
So yeah. It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of education. I'm seeing it pick up. I think people are doing a really good job about talking about it and about really bringing knowledge to these new emerging technologies. I think the incubator space has really improved. I think you see a lot of these like small business accelerators, and they're giving a lot of footing to companies that might not have had a platform before. But it's having these discussions. It's making sure that we're having education opportunities. And it's even education opportunities. Like I said, I do a fair amount of outreach to schools. It's even there, right? Because this isn't a today problem. It's a pretty much for the rest of existence problem.
Exactly.
And so it's educating and it's outreach and it's working together as opposed to like, thinking that one technology is the silver bullet. That's not, it's a global problem. It's a global problem we're addressing, a global market. And so different technologies are going to address different parts of the problem. So it's a collaborative effort.
No, exactly. I completely agree. And, speaking of that education piece, obviously that hopefully attracts, folks to the sector wanting to get, a part of this bigger mission that we have, like you said, for the rest of eternity, basically.
Turn home. As long as we have an earth.
Exactly, hopefully. What advice would you give to others considering, careers in the sector, and where could they maybe find mentors like you were mentioning before?
I mean, there are a ton of universities now offering programs in this, right? I've seen a uptick, especially in like the business development side for hydrogen. I've seen a huge uptick in like specific business development programs in that sector. And so I
Yes.
think I mean, there's a little bit of research involved in it,
Of course.
but I'm seeing a lot more. The other side of it, though, is on the employers. We do a ton of work with our area technical colleges, with our area workforce development type committees on what we see the job force looking like in the future, on what needs we have so that they can start certification programs for it, so that they're aware, right? Because the job market is constantly changing. And I think Utah is really, I mean, I always tout Utah probably more than I should because our population is out of control. But I think Utah really does a great job in keeping an eye forward and like having those discussions with industry of like, where do you see this going and what do you see yourself needing in the future? So there's a responsibility on clean tech companies to get
Yes.
involved in your communities, so that they're ready. They're ready to provide you with the workforce for these wonderful jobs you're creating. They're great jobs, right? High
Exactly.
tech, high pay, all of it. Meaningful, like wonderful jobs, but there's training.
Yes, exactly. And that actually brings me exactly to our final question, which is, for professionals looking to enter the hydrogen industry, what skills and knowledge do you think are essential for success in this rapidly evolving field?
I mean, I think from the engineering side, there's still like the basics of
Right.
engineering. We have chemical, mechanical, we have electricians, right? Like the standard core set in technology development still stands. On the business development side, this is so much more policy than
Yes.
sales. Understanding like tax implications and credits and rollouts and what the restrictions are for different areas. It's a state-by-state rollout of federal legislation. And so it's a really complex market. Like I can't bring in a business development manager who's like a general, like I
Right.
kicked butt in sales for medical. This is like a full emerging economy. So people who are coming
Absolutely.
into this need to understand that policy side. They need to understand what this network really looks like. And I'm seeing like you see some phenomenal people pop up and you have a conversation with them and they're like, oh, well, you should connect with this person who's connected to this person, and then this person pops out of the middle and you're just like,
Exactly.
thank you. I've been looking for 2 years for that answer, and you just were like, here you go.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And like you said, these are, this is a transition. This is something that is going to be evolving over the next couple of years. And so, especially on the commercial side, understanding long sales cycles, a more consultative sale, really getting into that policy piece, and sometimes being a little bit predictive, or going after things that you might not even know are there yet. It's such an important skill. But yeah, that all was really wonderful, and I really appreciate you coming on the show, Jessica. So thank you so much for chatting with us today. It's really been incredible to hear your inspiring journey, and we really appreciate you sharing with me and the Conversations in Clean Tech audience.
I really appreciate your time. This has been great.
It's been so
I
fun.
love the opportunity to share what we're doing, what's coming out of this economy. Like, what a fantastic time to be an engineer, right? Like, it's
Incredible.
pretty
It
amazing.
is very amazing, and I can't wait to see what's in store for Oxion in the future. It's going to be a really exciting time.
Thank you.
Of course. Well, we'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.